Hey, it's Melissa from Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600, and thanks for checking out the podcast right here. If you want, you can always subscribe, share, and like it. Hope to see you guys soon. Thanks.
Your city, your mayor. Melissa in the Morning with Mayor Joe Ganim, WICC 600.
Mayor Ganim, I'm so glad to have you here this morning. I know we're going to give out a special announcement. This is all in regards to the police chief hiring process in Bridgeport. How are you?
Good, Melissa. It's always a pleasure to be on. Thank you so much for having me and for allowing me the forum to kind of have a discussion with you, our listeners, and kind of bring people up to date, certainly on the police chief search and where we are with that.
Yeah, I think it's fantastic. And just to catch people up, if you didn't already know, this was in our news earlier this month. It has come down to acting police chief Rebecca Garcia, Captain Lonnie Blackwell, as well as recently retired Captain Roderick Porter. So, Mayor Ganim, first and foremost, before we give this announcement, it's hard to overlook that these are all people who are connected to the Bridgeport Police Department, whether they have or are serving currently the department. They all have connections to Bridgeport. Coincidence? Do you feel like that's a good thing, a bad thing? What are your thoughts on these three people?
It's interesting. I was a little bit, I don't want to say surprised, but I think I was a little bit surprised. I mean, so the process is, let me back up and I'll certainly touch on that.
Yeah, thank you.
So the public knows, and we think we know, you and I and Tia, who's our communications director, Tia Joseph's on the line too, and department heads and civil service and everybody. We think we kind of involved in this. But I think the public should, if we have a couple minutes, there's a process laid out for a lot of governmental actions. But in particular, it's very specific in the charter as to how a police chief is selected. And this was done with charter revision some years ago. And it goes through a civil service process. And, you know, we like to frame it as a national search, to your point, which means that however civil service, the administrative department of the city feels is best, they will go out and seek. That's their job, obligation, and duties, to seek the best. We like to refer to them as the best and the brightest, most experienced candidates for this position, a very, very important position in any city. And in the city of Bridgeport, chief of police is one that, you know, we take great pride in making sure that we have the leadership that we need in the department. And that's what we'll do in this process. So they did that. And in that process, they hired, this is no secret, it's been published, and I think it's a good thing. They hired who they thought was the best company. They're called the International Association of Police Chiefs, not uncommon name. And they participated with civil service, and I was not involved in this, to cover as much territory as they could through publications. I'm sure there's trade publications within law enforcement and so on, and word of mouth and whatever else they do, in order to get candidates. It is interesting, after a nationwide search, we do have three well-qualified Bridgeport officers who made the top three. So you said, is that good? Is it bad? Is it interesting? I think it's interesting. I think there's a lot of pluses to having local. Oftentimes when we pick, you hear, oh, they don't know anything about the city. How much experience do you have in urban law enforcement in a larger city like Bridgeport? So it's good. It's interesting that, you know, I thought at the beginning of this, and we've had in the past, that you'd get maybe a deputy chief or a second or third level hierarchy position from a larger department, which would be an potentially appropriate candidate. And I don't know the nuances on the top three, top four, top five. I read some stuff in the paper about some that had, you know, transitioned to other departments. So that's the first part of it. They go through a very extensive search. That's kind of like the not public part, although we put out as much public information as we could. Mm-hmm. And now, according to the charter, it comes to me as mayor. It's called the rule of three. So I'm certified with three qualified candidates. I'll just, you know, as you mentioned, no disrespect to the officer, say my last name. Garcia, Porter, and Blackwell all have held high leadership positions in the Bridgeport Police Department. So their experience, so the good part is their experience is well known to me, to other people in leadership positions in city government, to organizations that interact, community groups, citizens, council members. I was thinking today about groups like the Center for Family Justice, our partnerships with our school public education system and so on. So we have the plus there. I have the opportunity, and I want to go through the second part, and I'll stop and let you ask some more questions, as to how I want to conduct that. There's no guidance on this. So this is what we've decided as an administration is the best way for me to gather as much information and public input over the next month or so to pick the next police chief.
Which I think is really great. I think it's a really important thing to have, and I know you feel the same way, Mayor Ganim, to have public input on who's serving them, you know, top cop, and it's their, you know, their communities that are being impacted. So I think it's great that they have this opportunity. And yes, we are talking to Bridgeport Mayor Joe Ganim about the police chief hiring process. Before we get into the what comes next and where people can kind of weigh in and get involved, Mayor Ganim, I do know we're probably gonna do a double. I don't know if you could stay on the line for a double, but I think this is very important. How are you feeling going into this process after what happened with A.J. Perez? And again, I want to just remind folks that the A.J. Perez situation, I remember having Mayor Ganim on in the very beginning, and it was very disappointing to you how everything, was shaking out with that situation. So I don't know how you're sort of feeling going into this process, but do you feel like you've got stronger candidates, people who you think are really qualified, despite what news headlines have surrounded them and their past? You feel like this is going to be a better step forward, no matter which of the three, over A.J. Perez?
Well, the process, which is out of my hands until now, mm-hmm. and at the point that I get the three names, which is now, as it was in the last process, is one which gives the mayor discretion. The rule of three was created, and I'm somewhat critical of if I want, but let me talk about the positive, is to give a choice. In other mm-hmm. words, In a lot of what's called the civil service system, it's much more rigorous and strict. In other words, it gives you the top candidate for many positions. Certainly within the police department, it ranks them, and then they are appointed or sworn in to ranks by being number one. So here, it's supposed to give the chief executive officer, the mayor, in this case me, the ability to have some discretion. But up until that point, in this case and in the last one, it's put in the hands predominantly of the experts in the field that go through a process. They vet the testing process and all that kind of stuff. All I was able to do in that process and all I'm able to do with this process is accept the results, not go back and say, gee, was the test done right? Was this done right? That's really supposed to be vetted by the firm, and in this case,
before it gets to your desk,
before it gets to my desk. So I'm going on the premise that I have three, and in this case, I know the three officers. Okay, so I can tell you that at least with my experience with them, mm-hmm. We have three well qualified individuals, any of which would serve the city well, have the fundamentals to serve the city well as the city's police chief. Whether any one of them is better qualified or better suited to be the police chief at this time, under these circumstances, the city of Bridgeport, I think who that is yet to be determined. So I'm confident that we have three qualified candidates. I know all three of them. As I said, they have a record in Bridgeport. They're going to do, as we'll go into it whenever you're ready, they're going to have a series of opportunities to allow people to know more about them and to have an impact on the decision-making process.
Yeah.
And we can talk about that whenever you're ready.
Bridgeport Mayor Joe Ganim is here with us with a big announcement. We are going to learn what the police chief selection timeline is looking like to figure out who's going to be the next top cop in Bridgeport. So, Mayor Ganim, you have the floor. What do people need to know when it comes to having public forums available to them and when they should show up and all that good stuff?
Yes. So to work up to the timeline over the past week, I was certified three names of top candidates for police chief for the city of Bridgeport last week. Since then and now, we've had a series of internal meetings with department heads in order to look at what would be the best way to, for me, now this comes down to singularly my decision to pick one of the top three. We think at least now we're going to start with two public hearings. They're going to allow Bridgeport residents, stakeholders, the opportunity to ask questions, direct questions, to the three top candidates. One will be held at Central High School. The second will be held at Harding High School. These two public hearings will both be streamed live on Facebook Live. WICC is certainly welcome if you're able to, and other media outlets to record them, to stream them or put them out there. I'm also calling as one of the meetings a special meeting which I don't do very often, a special meeting of the city council. And to have them, and I've talked to the council president about this, so that they can interview as elected officials in the city of Bridgeport who deal every day in the district and beyond with some of the challenges in our city with public safety, to interview the top three candidates in city council chambers. So the meeting be chaired by the council president. The public will be able to attend this as well, but this is primarily in for members of city council to have their opportunity to ask questions of the three candidates for police chief.
Wow. That's awesome.
The dates, let me give you the dates on those real quick.
Yes, please.
And this will all be out in a release. But the first one, called the Community Forum, is at Central High School, is October 11th. So I think that's a little more than, is that 2 weeks away? But October 11th at 6 p.m.
Yep.
At Central High School.
Okay.
And then October 13th, I will notice the City Council Forum in City Council Chambers at 6 p.m. And again, the public's invited to that forum as well. So October 11th is the Community Forum at Central High School. October 13th, 2 days later, is the forum at City Council Chambers. And then October 18th, we'll have a second, actually a third forum here. Will be at Harding High School at 6 p.m. My sense is we're going to get a feel from those forums as to how much input there is, whether everybody has a chance to kind of hear what they want to hear, to say what they want to say. And there's a couple of things that I'll mention, and I'm open to anything else that we think might be appropriate during the process, but this seems to be a pretty thorough process as I go through it. Then on October 20th, internally, there'll be meetings, as we've done before, with city department heads. We've invited members of the Bridgeport Legislative Delegation. Our state representatives and our state senators will be invited, and that'll be at a time to be determined. Then I will have my opportunity to interview, we haven't set these yet, late October, early November. I'll interview each of the three candidates separately, of course, where we go from there in a timeline leads me to mid-November, where is my expectation and goal to announce our new police chief, or my choice for the new police chief. There is a little bit going on. There's this thing called the 30-day appeal period.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to conduct the forums, the community forums, and our meetings during this period of time. We won't make any decisions until that time frame is over, just to ensure that we're not jumping too far ahead. But my goal is, the city of Bridgeport's waited long enough for a new police chief. I'd like to move this deliberately, comprehensively, as I think we're doing with what I've just announced, but expeditiously, in order to allow for the city to move forward with new leadership in the Bridgeport Police Department.
And Mayor Ganim,
I say new leadership doesn't mean I haven't made a decision.
I was going to say, yeah, no.
Chief Rebecca Garcia is in leadership. She is the acting chief of police. She is one of the three finalists, along, as I said, with either two captains or a captain and a former captain, Porter and Blackwell.
So,
and
Mayor,
you can ask me anything else you want about the candidates, about my thoughts, about what I'd hope to get out of the forums and all that. But whatever you want to ask me.
I only had one more question, Mayor Ganim, only because if I had an hour, my goodness, I would chat with you forever. But my last question is actually with these forums. I know I had this question, and some of our listeners did. Do current police officers who are already with the Bridgeport Police Department, do they have a say in what they're looking for? When you speak of Rebecca Garcia, for example, like, I've met Rebecca. I think she's lovely. I mean, I don't work for Rebecca, so I don't know. I've never worked under her. But when we've ever had exchanges, I like her as a person. She seems like she seems great. But I do know in the news there have been concerns with many other people in her department currently. So do we talk to the police officers who are currently serving the department as well? Do they get to weigh in on this?
Yeah, it's a good question. So they can come, and this is not the whole answer, but they can come to the community forums and ask the questions, certainly. And it may be a little bit awkward for them, so maybe they won't do that because now they're talking to an officer that's, they're asking a question of their chief. So I don't know whether they'll do that, but they're invited, and there's nothing that will preclude that from happening. Two is, there are organizations within the police department, as well as, the union. There are organizations of officers that have commonalities, and I've either heard from them or will hear from them, I'm sure. But I will tell you this. It is critically important. It'll be a criteria that I will utilize in evaluating who should be the chief. as to how I think that they will manage the department. So one aspect of this is internal. Who is the best able person and has demonstrated that, or I believe will demonstrate, the ability to manage the police department in not only a fair way with integrity, but with efficiency. This is not directed at anyone, past or present, but without excuses. These jobs are terribly, terribly demanding. Resources are never enough. And you could never, it's never where you put a flag in the ground and say, hey, we just solved public safety in any community, nonetheless, a big city like Bridgeport. So I will not, I'll use my best efforts not to put someone in a position who's going to tell the public that there's reasons or excuses why we can't provide, we can't produce, or that we can't effectively not only meet a feeling of public safety, but accomplish continuing to improve public safety in Bridgeport. That's someone who's not afraid to call it as they see it, to do what needs to be done within the department, one, to establish fairness, both in the day-to-day operation, efficiency in the utilization of the manpower that we have, to make sure the public is addressed and respected, that response times are as efficient as they can be, and that we do our job as best we can. Now, certainly there's limitations and reasons why things are not perfect, and that'll continue. But I expect an officer as chief of police, in this case, one of these three, to be able to step up, walk out, deal with whether it's the press, whether it's the public, anything from quality of life complaints like we get in oft times in the North End with college students and parties. Those cannot be dismissed. They must be addressed. Mm-hmm. To terrible loss of life and families and victims that need to know that this department, that the city stands with them and will continue to be with them. So there's a whole host of things that I will look for in these forums. I hope people will ask the tough questions, will come. My concern is that we don't have a lot of people that show up to these things, and then later on we'll say, why didn't you pick that one?
Yeah. I mean, but that comes down to, honestly, so we, the media, have to do a good job as well of getting that out there. And Mayor Ganim, I certainly, would love to make that a priority here on the show. I think this is a really, really important process. I know I can only speak for my show, but I can tell you that this is something that I will continue to bring coverage to and reminders to people when those forums are open on the 11th and the 13th, the first two that people should know about. So unfortunately,
good. I look forward to it. We can come back on during the, and talk from there. And I really appreciate the opportunity to be on today. This will be sent out, if it hasn't already, in a formal release, so that hopefully all the media outlets will have it.
Perfect.
And people are aware of it. And we'll be pushing it on our webpage and with, with our whatever our media operation is to do that. So I look forward to it. Maybe we can talk, I don't know about next week, but very soon again about this topic and other topics.
That would be great. Mayor Ganim, thank you so much for your time. And I look forward to chatting soon. All right.
Okay,
thank you so much. Bye-bye. Bridgeport Mayor Joe Ganim here on WICC.
What California has done is they've said by 2035, which is, 13 years away, they want to make sure that you only can sell all electric vehicles. And, we're going to take a look at that. I have talked to Ford. I have talked to General Motors, whether this is something that is, A, either very costly, or B, something they won't be able to honor. And they're very sympathetic to that. They like clear clarity of what it's going to look like. You can't do it in 3 years. That would crush people. But I think over 13 years, it may make some sense. So we're going to look at that in the next session.
So you're hearing from Governor Ned Lamont. We were talking just last week about what the future looks like here in Connecticut when it comes to electric vehicles. Connecticut electric vehicle owners who have already benefited from a recent surge in state incentives may actually qualify for even more savings. CT Electric Car has actually been a forerunner in the EV industry for the past 10 years. And we have the vice president here this morning, April Milha, who is here to give us some more exciting information along with details on the company's upcoming public anniversary celebration next month. Good morning, April. Thank you so much for being here. How are you?
Good morning. I'm good. Thanks for having us here today.
Absolutely. First of all, April, I have to confess, I'm not too familiar with CT Electric Car. What, who are you guys? What do you do?
So Connecticut Electric Car, we've been in business. It's actually a division of Newington Electric. So Newington Electric's been in business since 1958. We are electricians all over the state of Connecticut. We formed a division called Connecticut Electric Car 10 years ago. We saw the need for electric car charging stations. So basically, we are service electricians, new install electricians for electric car charging stations throughout the state of Connecticut.
Okay. And it sounds like, so you guys have been around, it's saying, for the past 10 years?
Yeah, Connecticut Electric Car, we started that division 10 years ago, but okay. Our parent company has been around since 1958.
Got it. Now, I'm just curious, April, how many EV charging systems has the company installed since its inception?
I would have to guess over 1,000.
Oh, wow.
We started the first installation roughly in 2011 at Blueback Square in West Hartford, and since then we've just been installing them at businesses and homes. It did slow down for a few years, but over the past year, it's definitely been picking up with the new incentives that have been going on. But we installed it at Blueback Square, the Newington Town Hall. We have four stations at our office specifically that are open to the public to use in Newington. So we have been installing them for a long time. I would say over 1,000.
Okay. Wow. You know, April, I have to be honest, and I'm sure you can kind of agree with this. Like most things in our world, electric vehicles have become politicized. And so I get a lot of questions, whether people like it or they don't. I do think there's a lot of confusion around electric vehicles. Personally, I've always been an environmentally conscious person. I know I'm afraid for my future grandchildren. I wanna see that we can live a more sustainable life, that we can continue generation after generation, and we're trying to clean up our act. One of the biggest things we can do has always been, you know, fixing the car situation on the roads. I know even in the 90s growing up, the big thing was carpooling, right? That was like the big thing was you better figure out carpooling to school. Like that's how we're going to save the planet. And obviously that was just not enough. And here we are now going the electric route. So I don't dislike electric vehicles. I actually really don't. One of my friends has a Tesla, and I drove in it last year and I fell in love with it. I thought, wow, what an incredible vehicle. It was a little out of my price point. When I say a little, it was a lot. It was very much out of my price point. Like I am literally a middle income kind of a gal here, you know, dual income living in New Haven County. So first and foremost, do you think, April, that we are gearing towards more affordable electric vehicles? Because I still think there's a thought in many people's heads that, sure, you want us to go electric, but I don't have the money to do that.
Well, I do think that over the past year, they have done some incentives that are making them more affordable. They're giving a lot of incentives for tax write-offs. They're lowering the cost of the electric vehicles. All vehicles are expensive, so it doesn't matter whether it's going to be an electric vehicle or it's going to be a gas-powered vehicle. They're expensive across the board. I have been looking into more affordable electric vehicles. I know that Ford has a truck that is about $20,000, which is actually amazing because you can't really buy a truck. And that's I believe it's a hybrid. I know that the Mini Cooper is about $30,000, and that's an all-electric vehicle. So with them becoming more affordable, they're also making them so the range is higher for mileage. So before, it used to be you used to have to charge it, and it would take forever to charge. You can only get 20, 30 miles. Now, with the level 2 charging stations, you can plug in the charger. You could charge it in 2 to 4 hours. You can drive your car about 300 miles. So they definitely, over the past year, have come a long way. And more affordable, that too.
That was going to be my next question. And again, just for people who are just tuning in, April Mielha is here, the vice president of Connecticut Electric Car. And we're talking really all about the electric car movement that we're not just seeing here in Connecticut, we're seeing across the country. And of course, it's to better the environment, to better protect our worlds, and to give a future to our generations to come. So you answered my next question, which was how long can most EVs travel before they need to be recharged? So 8 to 14 hours about? Is how long they'll last?
Well, it depends on where you're plugging it in. So if you plug it into your home, every car comes with a 120-volt plug-in charger. So if you plug it in with that standard plug that just plugs into a regular wall outlet, that could take 2 to 3 days to charge at a full charge. But if you're plugging it into a level 2 charger, that can range between 2 and 4 hours to charge. So it depends on what charging station you have installed or where you actually go to charge. They also do make the level 3 chargers, which are the DC fast chargers, which you're going to see mostly at a gas station because that's like a 15-minute charge. They want people in and out, gas station or a convenience store. But those are a lot faster, 15 minutes, but they require different electricity. They're a much larger station, much more expensive. So you're not going to see that in anyone's home.
Okay. We are chatting this morning with Vice President April Mielha, who's with Connecticut Electric Car, talking about EVs this morning. April, I just got a very interesting question from one of our listeners who works in engineering. He said, you know, we're dealing with power plants that have been running for, gosh, 150 years across the U.S. Our efficiency with energy is less than ideal. It's like 40% to 50%. Will these cars really make a difference in getting us out of the pit that we're in? So essentially, will electric cars really make an environmental impact, but also will they really save us energy overall?
Well, that is a good question for an engineer. Yes, anything, any little bit helps. I mean, regardless, you're going to be using energy in some form to power your car. So there are things that are better with driving an electric vehicle. There is zero emission. Obviously, you have batteries, but you have a 10-year battery life warranty on the battery. So, yes, there are some good and bad to everything, gas and electric. So any little bit is going to help with going electric. And, of course, you have it on the other side. So it's kind of a question for an engineer to answer, because I'm not an engineer, but I do feel like driving an electric vehicle is going to help in the future.
And April, as we were kind of talking before the break, we were discussing sort of the chargings and what that looks like. I think one of the concerns I'll sometimes hear from listeners, and it's really more of a question of what you don't know, you can't really answer. And for many of our listeners, they've never had an electric vehicle, so it's a legitimate concern. Two things. One, I hear a lot about, well, what if I run out of energy or electricity, essentially? What if I run out and I'm stranded on the highway? You know, is it very similar to like when you know you're running out of gas? Like, how easy is it to just get off the highway and find electric charging stations? And then the other concern I always get are the batteries, that it's almost impossible for firefighters to get rid of that without letting it destroy the entire vehicle.
Right. Well, I mean, there's so many unknowns still with any new technology. So, I mean, the batteries, they do take a little bit longer to extinguish than if it was a gas vehicle, but they don't advertise every time that there's a gas car fire. But the minute that there's an electric vehicle fire, the world is on board with it because it's new. So,
That's a good point.
That's the only thing you're going to see right now, which is okay. But if you did the research on how many gas fires there are, you're going to see there's a lot more than compared to the electric fire. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's personal preference. And if you don't like having an electric vehicle, that's a personal preference also. I believe that it is going to be the future, whether anyone likes it or not. I believe that eventually it's either going to be a gas and electric vehicle or fully electric. If you've never had a chance to drive an electric vehicle, I think that before they make a decision, they should jump in one and take a test drive, because they're amazing. They have a different type of a power. They're a lot smoother. There's very low maintenance, and I'm not a car dealership. We just install the car charging stations for them. And I have a Jeep. It's gas powered. I don't drive an electric vehicle. I have an electric work vehicle, but I look at the electric vehicles and I say, wow, this is a different world right now. And it's amazing. And the maintenance cost is almost zero. Obviously you have the batteries that eventually are going to need some help. But it does come with a 10-year battery life. So in 10 years from now, when I've put 100,000 miles on my car or more, I'm going to be looking into a new vehicle anyway, as most people would be. So
That's a good point.
You have to look at it that way.
Yeah, well, and even when you talk about, and I know we're running out of time, April, even when you talk about saving money, like when you look at how much people are spending on gas, isn't it significantly cheaper to just even drive an electric vehicle?
It is. So the gas, I mean, you obviously don't have a gas bill, but you also, but you have an electric.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can charge it at public stations or work, they have it, it's mostly free. A lot of times public areas have it for free. So there are some areas that you get pretty cheap charging. I know that there are some incentives with the power company that if you do have an electric vehicle, they do give you some sort of money if you charge during off-peak hours. So there are incentives with the power company to charge your vehicle during off-peak hours, along with installing the charging station. So there's a lot of incentives right now going on for people to start building infrastructure for electric vehicles.
Mm-hmm. April, I am so sorry. I know we've run out of time. I know you guys are having a 10th anniversary coming up October 22nd to, again,
yeah,
celebrate your 10th anniversary. It's going to be for your headquarters. That's now in Newington. And I did want to make sure that if people want to learn more information, do you have a website or anything where I could direct people to?
Yeah, so we have our website, ConnecticutElectricCar.com or NewingtonElectric.com. You can also find us on Facebook, where I post a lot of updates on our event. Our event is basically going to be open to the public. There's going to be electric vehicles. We're going to have Eversource and UI contacts. We're going to talk about the rebates for installing car charging stations in your home or your business. There's going to be come hang out with your peers for electric vehicles. Check out our charging stations that we have here. Come look at what we offer for charging stations. Come just get advice or ask any questions, and we'll be able to help you.
Cheryl, I really appreciate, excuse me, April, I see Cheryl is calling in. April, I really appreciate you taking our call this morning. April Milha, who is the vice president of Connecticut Electric Car. I'd love to have you back on the show, April. I know we ran out of time, but really interesting stuff this morning. Thank you so much.
No problem. Thank you for having us.
All right. Thank you.
Connecting commerce to your community. Bridgeport Regional Business Council President and CEO Dan Onofrio. Now on Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600 AM and 107.3 FM.
We're chatting with Dan Onofrio this morning, and we got to talk about Sound on Sound in Bridgeport this past weekend. Good morning, Dan. How are you?
I'm fantastic. How are you this morning, Melissa?
I'm doing fine. So, Dan, I have to confess, because I'm not going to put opinions and things out there when I myself did not experience them, between my husband having the flu and Rosh Hashanah, I did not go to Sound on Sound this past weekend. However, from the news standpoint, I did see on social media there were a lot of critics out there, especially on Saturday, with some of the things that may have not been so perfect with Sound on Sound. So first of all, before we dive into any of that, I wanted to know from your professional standpoint, success, flop, in between, what do you think about Sound on Sound now that it has been complete for its first year?
Well, absolute success, Melissa. You know, anytime you have 30,000 people plus coming into your community, it's a good thing. Now, you know, obviously there's a lot that we can learn from the experiences, but think about the weekend overall. It kicked off on Friday with Ringo Starr at the amphitheater, and then it flowed right into, you know, Sound on Sound on Saturday and Sunday. And so from my perspective, if you're a music lover, music goer, you know, I think it was a great weekend for Bridgeport.
So a couple of the things that were really highlighted, I would say, I'm going to break them down into just a couple of categories. Number one was, it seemed like safety. People felt like for the amount of people who came into Bridgeport or who were on the grounds at Seaside Park, there weren't enough safety measures put into place for people, and that it was overcrowded. What are your thoughts on this, and how can we improve that?
Yeah, no, great question. And first of all, shame on you for not going this weekend. But that's
I know, story. Right? Awful, horrible, awful wife. I know, terrible. My gosh, awful, awful. Good Lord, I'm sorry. Did you go? Did you get to go?
Of course. Well, I wouldn't miss it for the world.
So sorry, Dan Onofrio. I'm just not at your caliber. I'm so sorry. I have something to improve upon, and that's fine. I have no problem admitting my faults. So that's really, did you go Saturday or Sunday or both?
I was there both days. Yep.
Oh wow, you were really dedicated.
Well, I love live music. I think we've talked about it in the past, and you know, I didn't know a lot of the bands, but gosh, man, the lineups both days were incredible. I thought,
yeah,
you know, I really wanted to see Stevie Nicks. That was kind of my motivation to go. I've never seen her perform live, and gosh, at 74 years old, she crushed it. She was awesome.
Yeah, she sounded great.
But yeah, so Yeah, so to go back to your question, you know, certainly, and I'm not an expert at this stuff. I don't know what the thought process was in terms of how many people they wanted to get into the park for both nights and or for both days, and, you know, how to manage that, the logistics side. I can't speak to any of that other than from my own personal experience. And I will tell you, Saturday was rough. It was very, very rough. And I think a lot of it was just contributed to just the sheer volume of people that were
so
there.
So why do you say it was really rough? Since you were there to see it, what did you feel was lacking?
Well, to your question on the safety component, you know, there were a lot of people. And, you know, if there was an emergency, whether medical or otherwise, I think, you know, it would have been difficult for people to get into the pit, for lack of a better word, the standing room only area, just because you couldn't really get yourself around. But we got there mid-afternoon, I'd say around 4 o'clock, and it was packed. And I was, you know, I think Jimmy Coppola came on and said, "Hey, you know, we're expecting another 5,000 people to come for the evening part."
Wow.
And I go, "Oh my gosh, how are we going to get all these people in here?" So, you know, I don't know if they had a limit on capacity. I don't really know those details, other than that Saturday, definitely it was very difficult to move around, just to walk around. I tried to get from one side to the other side. You know, they had two stages side by side, and it was impossible. You just couldn't do it.
So, do you think
really fighting your way through?
Do you think they should cut down? Like, should they make a cap next year? Because I know that they have a contract for the next 10 years. So, should they make a cap?
I mean, arguably, again, I don't know what the square footage per person should be, and then the size of the park and those kind of details. But to me, it seems like there should be some limit. This way people can have an enjoyable experience, because on Sunday, coupled with the fact that they made some adjustments, you can tell there were some adjustments with the walkways and with people, you know, helping guiding people. I think another big contributor to making Sunday so much better was the fact that there was a lot less people there.
Mm.
So it was, you know, more enjoyable to walk around and get yourself around and you know, really experience the entire festival, from the village to the, you know, the sports bar that they had and those kind of things. So I think a big component, I think they were prepared from a safety perspective. I had no doubt that they had the medical people there. They had, you know, they had tents for medical. I just think that if there was a problem, you know, fortunately, knock on wood, I don't think there was anything major that happened. I think it would have been really hard for them to address, especially if it happened in the middle of, you know, in the middle of the venue.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I'm speaking from the safety side of it. Obviously, you want everyone to experience a great weekend, but at some point or another, I think you have to say, okay, this might be too many people.
Mm-hmm. Dan Onofrio's here, who's the president and CEO of the Bridgeport Regional Business Council, and we're talking about Sound on Sound. Huge festival. I mean, Mayor Ganim came on my show last week, Dan, and said this is, in his, he believed it was the biggest festival Bridgeport has ever hosted in its history. I don't know if that's true or not, but he said this was the biggest one that they had anticipated hosting in the city's history. I don't know if that's true or not. But.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't know the facts on that, you know, with the history, especially the early years of the Barnum Festival and things, these Bridgeport-centric things that we've done over the years. But certainly in recent years, you know, especially the last 10, maybe 20 years, I can't imagine anything bigger than this. And, you know, people came from all over, Melissa. I was talking to folks from South Carolina, you know, the West Coast, people from Manhattan, Massachusetts. People came from all over to listen to this. And that's the beauty of this, you know, music festival. We hosted the new tourism director for Connecticut, Noelle Stevenson. She keynoted our annual meeting in June. And, you know, the State of Connecticut Office of Tourism was behind us, you know. And, you know, when you have the State of Connecticut really also supporting an event like this, you know, I think it goes a long way and, you know, really puts Bridgeport on the map. And I think overall, Bridgeport showcased really, really well. The feedback that we've received so far from folks that are not from the area, most of them had great experiences, you know, regardless of you know, the complications and the issues that occurred on Saturday. You know, overall, the feedback we heard has been really positive. You know, of course, there's some logistical things, right, that came up. You know, people that took the train in, you know, they were a little confused because they didn't know when they got off the train where to go for the shuttle. So we probably could have done a better job of signage or helping people get to the shuttles. Yeah, but those are things you learn from, right? And you make it next year better, and you adjust for those things.
We're talking this morning with Dan Onofrio of the Bridgeport Regional Business Council, and we're getting a little feedback on Sound on Sound. And as I mentioned earlier in this segment, I did not have the opportunity to go to Sound on Sound. I was bummed. I really personally wanted to. I mean, Stevie Nicks would have been awesome. I would have loved to have seen the Spin Doctors. I grew up in an era where Dave Matthews was literally a summer go-to for about 5 years straight, all through high school and college. So would have loved to have seen Dave Matthews, even though he had to get cut short because of the weather, still would have been worth it. But because of prior engagements, unfortunately, I could not go. In the meantime, though, Dan was there for both days, and I'm getting firsthand from him what he saw, the good, the bad, the ugly, everything in between. And the thing I heard about Dan, besides the crowdedness, you know, little things like that they ran out of food, those are very, to me, very easy fixes. Again, as you mentioned, it was the first year, and there were very quick improvements from day one to day two. So those are things that, like, listen, people have a complaint about everything, and I'm not saying it's not important, but I think two of the things, you know, safety, certainly worth tackling, but the other is parking and the congestion. And you and I have talked about that before with both the amphitheater as well as the arena, that the traffic in that area has always been a nightmare. I'm not as familiar with Seaside's traffic because I had never gone to those prior festivals. It was just not a scene I wanted to be at. So I'm not like aware or familiar with why it was 2 to 3 hours for people to get out of there. But again, when you're talking about 30,000 people, you know, the math kind of adds up. But I wasn't sure if you could kind of weigh in on the traffic issues.
Yeah, you know, there's a couple comments from personal experiences as well as experience I've heard from other folks that came in from out of town. You know, so there was first the issue of the shuttles, right? So coming off of the train, you know, people had, you know, weren't sure really where to go. And then when they finally found the shuttle over at the amp, you know, the shuttle really didn't have a direct route to the amphitheater, to Seaside. So they were kind of part of the regular traffic pattern, and they were just, you know, stop and go. And a colleague of mine that came up from New York said that they were a little disappointed because they lost about 40 minutes or so just getting to Seaside once they got into Bridgeport.
Oh, wow.
It took that long to get there. Yeah, so that was just a note I'm just putting out there. And of course, you know, we'll talk to the folks that organize this on some of the feedback that we heard just so we can plan better for next year, you know. But I don't know what that means for, like, emergency vehicles and stuff like that. I would suspect that the emergency vehicles had a way to get in and out very quickly. I would hope so anyway. But beyond that, you know, with the sheer volume of cars in the lot, I thought, you know, getting there, we didn't have a problem. I mean, granted, I know the area pretty well. They didn't have specific roads blocked off until you got to the parking areas where they started funneling people to the specific lots that you were designated to. So getting in, I didn't have much of an issue. Leaving Saturday night was very difficult. You know, you had, I don't know how many cars, but a lot of cars, you know, trying to get out of the park. Mm-hmm. You know, there's only a few ways out once you're in.
Right.
And to me, yeah, from my experience, it felt like that the people that were directing the traffic weren't working together in unison to have a flow going. So I think it's a trainable thing. I think it's something that can be addressed. You know, I don't think there was an issue that they neglected something. I just think that the folks that were, you know, at the gates and then within the lots, you know, people didn't know really where to go to get out.
Mm.
And that was, I think, the miss on the parking side of it. So people got stuck and, you know, you started seeing people driving over curbs and, you know, just because, you know, you're sitting behind somebody for half an hour, you get frustrated, right?
So, yeah, right, right.
Yeah, so I think that was, you know, from my experience, what happened on Saturday evening. Sunday, literally, there was no problem. But again, I think it was a big, big part of that was because there was just so many less people there.
Mm-hmm.
It was pretty easy getting in and out with, you know, not too much trouble with traffic and stuff like that. We did hear from somebody that lives in the neighborhood. They were a little disappointed on the parking. Yeah, they lost their spots to concert goers. So,
oh, no.
A little bit of an inconvenience for the neighborhood, but they, you know, they got it. They were like, look, you know, it's a huge concert venue. We get it. You know, it just would have been nice if, you know, they could have accommodated the residents there a little bit better. But otherwise, you know, like I said at the beginning, I think this was a huge win for Bridgeport. And most of the things that we talked about, I think, are addressable. You know, we look forward to the next 20 years of this thing, you know?
Yeah, so, right.
At least I do.
Well, they've got that contract in place until at least 2032. So we certainly can look forward to next year and what is to come. And I do expect to go to one of these things. I think it'd be very neat. And Dan, unfortunately, we have run out of time. I did want to talk about kind of the trickle down effect for like hotels and restaurants. I'd imagine it was amazing for them.
Yeah, big win.
Yeah, I would think so. I would think so. And Dan, I really appreciate you giving me the time this morning to do a debrief and really go into some of these issues that were reported on and really give us a good snapshot of both sides of this. So I thank you.
You're welcome. Anytime.
And I'm glad you had a good time. I'm glad you had fun for both of us.
Yeah.
I'll try to make it next year.
Just the experience, the bands, the performers, they were all just the whole thing was just, I thought, was over the top. It was brilliant.
That's
awesome.
It was good. All right. Well, Dan Onofrio, always a pleasure to chat with you. Thank you so much, and we'll talk again next week.
You got it. Thanks, Melissa.
Thank you.